Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we'll be discussing British independent religious drama Apostasy, as well as hearing from the writer-director Daniel Cocatello. I'm Sam Heller, and joining me in the sacred place of worship, that is the pod studio, brother Alistair Bayman.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever the time you're listening to this.
And sister Kelly Powell, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. Both be on your best behaviour, lest you be shunned from the pod booth. So we are talking about Apostasy. This is our Apodstasy this week. Written and directed by Daniel Cocatello, a former Jehovah's Witness himself. Apostasy is a rare insight into the complex nature of faith, family, duty and love. We follow devout Jehovah's Witness sisters Alex and Louisa and their mother Ivana, who are united in the truth. But when Louisa starts to question the advice of the elders, she makes a life-altering transgression that threatens to expel her from the congregation. So before we hear from Daniel Cocatello, can I just get your initial reactions to the film, guys?
Weirdly, I know it's weird to bring it up, but it's similar to when I was on Fiddling on Pete, in terms of I watched the film the first time and it kind of didn't sit well with me. I was kind of distant from it. And then I went back a second time and then I realised what a profound piece of film it is in terms of its themes, but then also what it does with like local talent of Manchester and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So on second watch, it felt more, but I feel like I'll be an anomaly in that. I feel like everyone will be impacted first time by this.
Yeah, I can imagine seeing it in a cinema is going to be a good experience to like sort of immerse yourself in it, because I think it's a super, super controlled film. And he does draw you in to the world and these characters. I thought it was really good.
All right. Alistair, you were the man on the ground who we sent to speak to Daniel.
Man with the mics.
Yeah.
Kind of tying into my rewatching the film, it was, when it went into the interview, really, I did enjoy the film for its features, but I kind of felt the narrative strayed a little bit. But then when I sat down with Daniel and we talked through some more stuff, which you'll hear in the interview, and also his background, I was like, okay. And I could just see it in his eye how personal this story was to him and how he doesn't go in and go like all the Jehovah's Witnesses are going to burn in hell. He takes a very slight approach with it. So I was like, okay, I need to go back and rewatch this film. And then that led in to me rewatching it and reappraising it, I think, in my head. So yeah.
Great. So here is Alistair speaking with Daniel Cocatello.
I just want to first of all congratulate you on depicting the North in such a true fashion. In a, you know, you can go Ken Loachy with it, but you've gone in a good line with it, I think. So what was the kind of initial thinking of returning home in a sense and focusing upon a religion that was or used to be so dear to your heart?
I think it was a story that I, for a long time, I wasn't very comfortable talking about or telling, dealing with the witnesses. I think for a while I was quite scared of it, you know. I remember when I first left the religion, I would read literature that was critical of it and I would shake with fear. You know, it had that, still had that kind of control over me. So it wasn't for a long time. I started to feel a bit more comfortable and I had some distance from it, so then I was able to go back to it and be, and I think that was useful because in the end I think it's a more honest and sort of objective story because of that.
Yeah, as a writer-director, what's the creative process with that? Because in the film you pay a lot of close attention, obviously the characters, but it's got a lot of depth in terms of using a tight Academy ratio.
It's not actually Academy.
Oh, is it not?
No, sorry, no, sorry. Me and my cinematographer, Adam Scarf, we were looking at a lot of photography and paintings at the time. And there was a certain kind of formalism, and they were very austere, these paintings. And when we were doing the test shoot, we just couldn't get that feeling into the imagery we were trying to create. So then I randomly just said, what if we try a stills photography aspect ratio, which was 3:2? So Adam was like, yeah, sure, it's never been done before, and we had to create our own aspect ratio. So we did it, and straight away we knew we'd managed to cap the way we were framing, we captured that feeling I was looking for. So yeah, it's actually 3:2, a stills photography aspect ratio, which is, you know, unconventional. And because of that, the execs asked me to also shoot 69. So there's like 69 version and a 3:2 version now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is that Adam Scarth who did Daphne?
That's well? Right, yeah.
Really, really, really good film that not many people saw, unfortunately, but definitely worth a watch. And
yeah. No, it was great, yeah. Yeah. I thought Daphne, the cinematography on Daphne was great, yeah, and it was exactly what I was looking for because he was shooting in a certain way, you know, shining light into rooms from outside, so people were able to move around within the space. And he's from up north as well, and he responded really well to the script.
That's good. You use Molly Wright, is it, the lead actress?
That's right, yeah.
I was looking at IMDb page, and she's only done TV as well with your other two lead actors. How did you go about casting them? Because as I think you've said in a previous interview, you wanted to give kind of voice to actors who did TV, and you could like use this film to show people what they can do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I wanted to work with Northern actors. I feel like, especially younger ones, they telly just picks them up and they sort of get lost in telly. And if they ever do get film roles, they tend to get sort of typecast in a way. So I wanted to, you know, because we've got so much talent up north as well. I wanted to show a film audience what these TV actors can do. And worked with a Northern casting director, Michelle Smith, and she found... We looked at hundreds of people for the role, but we came across Molly Wright and Sasha Parkinson, and they were perfect for the roles.
Obviously, you focus upon three women in the family, and there's a distinct lack of patriarchal family members, but then it's kind of juxtaposed against in the church itself. You've got these kind of middle-aged, just, you know, suited, grey, mundane guys. Was that a conscious decision, or did that just kind of unfold with the nature of the topic?
Well, there's different parts to that question, but the main thing was that I wanted to show just how sort of patriarchal the society is within the Witnesses. And then also I wanted to explore what happens when the father figure leaves the family, because they're not allowed to get divorced witnesses. So it was I wanted to explore what it was like for a mother dealing with that. And then also I grew up, you know, it was my own mum who was first to join the religion, and she brought the rest of the family with her. And also all my aunties and all my cousins in the religion, they're all women as well. So I was influenced by that, and also by certain things that would happen to them that maybe I didn't feel quite comfortable with. So that's what I was exploring in the film.
In the film, there's a moment with Siobhan Finnery where she views a very slightly comical Americanized spiritual video. Was that something that you'd personally experienced in the religion? Because it stood out to me in the film. It's not a moment of comedy, but it was definitely almost a self-reflective thing to say, like, look, this is, kind of a idealized version of the church, which is portrayed by not just Jehovah's Witnesses, but I think Christians and other religions.
Yeah. I mean, I'd seen stuff like that, of course, yeah. The strange thing about the Witnesses is that in the real world, they're very austere, and their religious spaces are simple and quite clinical, and they have no iconography. They don't believe in that. They believe it's idolatry. And so they have very meek, simple lives, but then at the same time, they have this literature that is just hits you in the face with its technicolor imagery of paradise and these surreal images of young girls putting daisy chains around lions. So it was to show you how maybe I responded to that imagery back when I was a witness. Like now, as a secular audience, you can view that stuff and sort of laugh at it and think it's comical, but actually to the Witnesses, they can draw a lot of comfort from that stuff, especially at a time like in the film. You see that imagery and then you're left to decide on how you want to respond to it, because it's as if you're watching it. But then we undercut that and you cut back to Ivana and see how she's responding to it. So it's to sort of show you how different Ivana is responding to that.
Obviously, with it being focused on religion, and in a few weeks' time, I believe Paul Schrader's First Reformed is coming out, which kind of hits, not obviously, you know, different films, but very much religious angst and questioning one's religion. And was there any cinematic influences in this? Because obviously you talked previously about photography. I'm wondering about cinema, because, yeah, as I said at the start, you can go Ken Loach or even to a lesser extent Terrence Davis with this material, but I feel as though you don't, and your deafness as a writer comes through, which does with Schrader.
Yeah. I've not seen the Schrader's film, but I'm dying to see it. I guess in terms of films, maybe, you know, other religious films, films about spiritual problems or dilemmas. I was looking at that. An example, maybe Joan of Arc, or Debt, even, Dreyer's early films. Bergman, to some extent. Yeah. So I was looking more at that stuff, as opposed to Northern British films.
Yeah, the way the Jehovah's Witnesses speak, it's Urdu, isn't it, the language? Yeah. Was that kind of a coincidence that came about? Because growing up in the North, there is a huge Muslim community there now, and I feel as though it's great that you depict them in a way that is not, you know, negative or anything like that. They're just other human beings. So was that something that just came about, or was that cohesive in the script from the start, the Urdu side of it?
I felt that was always an interesting aspect of my my community, and our Kingdom Hall in particular. We had an Urdu congregation. We also had a Spanish one, and I just felt that was interesting to explore in the film as well, to show you that's what the extent that Witnesses go to, learning those languages to try and reach out to those people. It was only later in, I guess I didn't think about it at the time, but afterwards I've always found it quite interesting that Christians were trying to convert Muslims. Fundamentalist Christians were trying to convert Muslims into become Witnesses.
Yeah, thinking off the top of my head, like Aguirre, Wrath of God, Silence, like these noble white saviors coming to claim, so to say, their noble right. It feels it's an extension of that in a way.
There was a novelty to it as well back then, that when you went into those neighborhoods as white Jehovah's Witnesses, and you could speak their language, they were so surprised and impressed with it. It would help you then be able to talk about being a witness.
In the film, you naturally, because I was expecting a straight up narrative with Molly's character, but obviously, not to spoil anything, something happens in the film which changes that. Was the flow kind of character something that is like, I don't know, sorry, obviously knowing your background and context, as kind of like very psychoanalytical with it, but three different perspectives of your psyche. Is that right to say? Or like self-consciously, that was me at one point, or that was me when I was a teenager?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, if you're going to like compare my own life to anyone in the film, it's more kind of Louisa's journey, what she went through. She goes to art college, and because of that, it becomes a problem. It's kind of what happened to me. But then I was more looking at the real question behind the film was about to what extent will people go to for what they believe in to make it broader than just about the witnesses as well. So I was looking at three different characters. What do they believe in, and how far will they go? And what happens when family gets in the way? That was the main question behind the story. But then in terms of what happens with Alex, and that came about through development. It wasn't always like that. Originally, I started off the story as a prayer from Alex, and she would talk to God every day about what's going on. And it was through adapting that into a script, I realized, hang on, this needs to happen, really, in order to make the question bigger, you know. There's more at stake. Her mum, Ivana, she's dealing with the same issues of faith versus family, but on a much bigger scale at the end of the film.
The film's very silent, but there's a scene with Alex where they all have a dance at a family party. That moment I felt was very explosive in a sense, because the film's been so silent. Is that something that is, you talked before about the idealized image of like daisy chains and stuff like that, is music suppressed in a way because of its socio-political elements and freedom of sexuality and stuff like that?
To some extent, yeah. It's just got to be family friendly. That's the key thing. Yeah. And you know, we even shot a scene where they were debating whether or not the music was going to be okay to play at the party. But we ended up cutting it out. But you know, I remember back, because Michael Jackson was big when I was younger, and that was always a constant debate whether or not his music was okay, because he used to be a witness. He was a witness. And people couldn't decide if he was like an apostate or, you know, where he was within the religion. So if it was okay to listen to his music or not.
Yeah, listen to his music would be good, but I think watching his videos would be a different thing, because if you've got
Thriller was pretty horrifying.
Very, very horrifying. But lastly, is there anything up next for you? Are you working on anything else?
I'm working on a few projects, but it's really early days. I'm focused on stories set in the north, modern British stories for now. And some of them, one project in particular, is dealing with faith, but in a more abstract way.
Yeah, that's good, because I think with Francis Lee, God's Own Country, and The Leveling by Hope Dixon Leach, there seems to be kind of a strong, I don't want to say renaissance, because that's too labourly, but there seems to be a strong new wave, in a sense, of British filmmakers coming through, like with Claire Bernard as well, kind of adding to that. So I think it's good that your voice is being represented on the screen.
Definitely, yeah. It's amazing that we're now being supported and we're able to make films about where we're from. I'd add Joanna Hogg into that as well. I think she's an incredible filmmaker. Well, you know, it's thanks to the people at the BFI and BBC and places now that they're supporting us as filmmakers. You know, God's Own Country and The Leveling were made through this, developed through the same scheme as Apostasy High Features. So it's thanks to them.
Yeah, I think that regionality of England, even though it can cause conflict, as we were talking about before, just before we started interviewing, but it's definitely, it feels good to see these places represented so truly, and by people from them, such as yourself. So.
Yeah. No, and in a way, it still feels quite fresh. All these, like, I remember, I watched Funny Cow in a cinema.
Oh, Maxine Peake.
Yeah. And I still felt like this was quite unusual that here's a film about the North with all Northern actors dealing with sort of working class issues. It still felt like strange for that to be in a cinema.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I mean, it's more common for TV. I just hope we can continue to make these kinds of films and get them into the cinema.
I think there's making the films, but then also having the platforms to have them shown. So obviously here in London, it's great, but when you go north of Watford, you know, you've got Home in Manchester, which is absolutely amazing. And then you've got Fact at Liverpool, and further up towards Newcastle, you've got the Tyneside Cinema, I believe. And yeah, I feel as though there is a platform now for these films to be shown, which is good for everyone in the UK. Thank you very much for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, so the film's very much got religion at its centre. It's very much a film about religion and how religion affects our private lives. How do you think the film treats religion? Obviously, this is dealing with a religion that I don't think any of us have any personal connection with. It's quite a niche religion in a way, Jehovah's Witness, I think.
And they're also famously closed off to the public. Yeah. Like, nobody really knows, you know, what goes on.
I think, and most people know Jehovah's Witnesses from going door to door and or preaching, or on the way to the station today, I saw there were people with those like sort of leaflet stands outside the station, so they're known for that. I sort of remember as well, there was like one kid at school that was Jehovah's Witness, and they were like, they couldn't celebrate birthdays.
Yeah, very closed off.
Yeah, yeah, they're kind of known for that, but how do you think the film treated them? Because they haven't really been in film that much either.
The people or the religion?
The religion.
I think that
apart from as like a sort of side character or someone in the background.
Yeah.
I don't think they've ever been at the centre quite like this before.
No. It was interesting. I was thinking about this morning on my way here. I think that he's super, super compassionate when he handles his characters. You know, I don't think there's ever, as you said, like it's a pretty subjective film in the sense that it's coming from a place of, you know, his personal life, but I think in the way that he deals with his characters, there's never any judgment. I don't think he's judging their behavior. I think maybe he's being critical of the religion and how it imposes itself on people and how it sort of disrupts their lives. But I don't think that, like, I think he cares about his characters, and, you know, even some of their actions you can not condone, but understand at least. You know, you put yourself in their sort of worldview and perspective. I think that the way that he deals, I think he's been very clever with criticizing the religion. It's all very subtle, but it is kind of like this growing eeriness that sits with you as you watch the film, and you just kind of, it's pretty pressed and oppressive at the same time.
Like, it's not really a conventional narrative in the sense you follow. Like, you think of like The Last Temptation of Christ by Martin Scorsese or Silence. Like, they follow this one, even like Schrader's First Reformed, for like one character very, very specifically to this like moment of epiphany or downfall or something like that. But this takes this like three levels to it, which on second watch I was just like, wow, this is like really, really deft writing in the best possible sense.
So what about religious characters in film before this then, and how they've been shown? Because I think often they are very overly fanatical, like religious zealots. They're almost comedic in how overbearing and sort of insane they are with their beliefs. This film, although their beliefs are to us a bit, you know, they're out there, they are unconventional to us. We don't recognise them as being something that we could ever believe, but the film does treat them very humanely. Like, I was thinking like Carrie's mum, in Carrie.
Mm.
Like, she's like,
yeah,
this sort of, you know, got extreme Zealous. Religious views and is trying to control her daughter with these views in a slightly similar way to what Ivana's doing. And, you know, religion is the overall arching trajectory of their life. Mm. But they do it in such like a human...
Realistic.
Yeah. And let's talk about the characters then. Let's talk about Ivana, who's the mother here, played by Siobhan Finneran. Incredible performance. So real, so natural, so quiet as well.
So restrained.
Yeah, really restrained.
Yeah, she was great. You could see like this moment where you can just read on her face that inner turmoil that she's going through, you know, because she's so devout and she just wants to, you know, practice her faith, and but it's causing her so much pain personally. It was a great performance by her.
It's so weird because I knew her previous from Benidorm, and obviously that's like an ITV you know, like just Brits Abroad kind of thing. And then when she comes in here, yeah, it's just the quiet angst she has on her face, and she believes so devoutly in this religion, and you can see it upon her face. But then in the moments of, like, the scene I talked to about Daniel in the interview, where he's like, the video that they're playing, it's just, she looks flabbergasted, but also, like, she does take this very, very seriously, which is peculiar.
And when, especially moments like when, is it Louisa that becomes pregnant? Mm-hmm.
Yes,
when she finds out Louisa's pregnant, you know, you expect her to be angry to lose it, but she doesn't. She just has this very quiet, composed, okay, let's sort this out.
Well, I guess, you know, she's got this, it's almost like she's just following the rules.
Yeah.
So it's almost like she's got her agency is slightly stripped from her a lot of the time, and that's, I think, where the repression maybe comes in, is that, like, it feels like she's just going according to what, you know, is stipulated. Even in that reaction, it's very calculated. It's very much, well, this is what you need to do. Like, you know, I think it makes it even more heartbreaking, like a scene towards the end where she's and Louisa are having an argument, and she says it out loud. She's like, you know, Jehovah's love is conditional. And I feel like that's just her, that's totally her beliefs, you know, like conditional love. And I feel like it's reflected in, even though she might not really want to believe it deep down, it's reflected in the way that she treats her children as well.
It's really peculiar how he has like Louisa as this, the natural narrative means that she kind of has to leave the religion, but you kind of sense that her faith isn't as strong as Alex, where she's this devout, pure figure, like in the car when they're talking and she's like, Jehovah's going to do this. And it's like a really eerie scene. But when you reflect upon it, you're like, no, this is just like the code they've been given to then spread to the world. Whereas, to like three students coming home from college, that's like the most weirdest thing you've probably ever encountered. But to her, that's what she should be doing with her life.
It's a really clever scene, I think. Yeah. That he's really nuanced in the way that he finds ways how to show how disconnected the religion and the people are from everyday life, really. He's very smart.
He's smart
filmmaking.
Yeah, he says it in the interview with music and how that all has to be, like, goes through a system, and that's why... at the party scene, there's just that weird, strange music, because it's all the music is censored and you can't have like Taylor Swift, obviously,
right,
or anything like that. So they're so, he does a job of making you aware that they're so isolated from the world, but then they're so connected between the communities and stuff. It's such a weird paradox.
I didn't even think about the music. That's really that's someone who has been in this world could know to put that in. That's really good. And the film has a really interesting way of how it sort of shifts focus from the three women around, like quite effortlessly, like who's the main focus, who's the, you know, in like scene to scene, I feel like it changes quite a bit. I think you might expect the film to be about Louisa leaving this community, but it shifts back to Alex and it shifts back to Ivana quite a lot. Like, what did you make of the way the film sort of trod around juggling three, you know, really interesting and complex characters?
I think it reflects maybe Cocoteo's like angst and personal like experience of the religion, because you've got like Alex, who's this like very pure, will do anything for religion. Ivana, who's clearly a little bit not world weary, but she's aware that life is kind of not passed by, but she's just about being a mother, and then Louisa, who is just away from the religion. So I initially thought it was just going to be a story of Alex, and then when some stuff happens, you're like, oh. And I was really thrown off by that, and then it picks up with Louisa and then goes to Ivana. So initially I was like, no, I want, like I said, with Silence and First Reformed, I wanted like a normal, like big kind of like epiphany, religious focus moment. But the way it all interweaves the three, it then helps broaden the perspective of your perspective on the church, your perspective of the perspective. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I was also a bit, when it first shifts, you're like, oh, okay, this is not what, and then it kind of, I think from then on, you're like, okay, then it's not what I expect. I'm going to just sort of go with it. And then I think it was easier to sort of move between them.
And it looks, everything's very stripped back, like filmmaking-wise. Like the frame is very empty. And even when it's focusing on a character, even the close-ups, I feel like they're at the corner of the frame and there's like a lot of background behind them. And it's always plain background.
Stark.
Lots of empty space in the frame. Everything's very bare, very beige. Everything's very muted. Nothing. There's no like sharp imagery, really. There's nothing. Have you got the exact same notes?
Yeah.
Beige.
Well, muted. Muted and at times bleak production design.
Yeah. I think it's, I wouldn't say problematic, but when you approach like the north and north of Watford, you kind of, everyone has got this consensus. But I think in this case, it works because, like, I was looking at my notes, and the guy Stephen, who comes into it, the husband to be, when he's talking to Alex and he's saying, "We can have a good life, and I can be a window cleaner," and you're just like,
"And you a gardener?"
And I was just like, "You're getting by on that," so it makes sense for these people to be placed in this socio-economic position. You know, like some people may go, "Oh, it's like doom and gloom of the north. The north's an asshole. All this stuff." Yeah. But like in reality, what more, and they're in Oldham, which is like north of Manchester. It's not the best place on the earth. So it kind of makes sense for to not go like to have like an epiphany moment where the sky turns blue and stuff like that. Like it's, even though it is a beige muted color palette, there is like weird moments of darkness to the frame with the contrast between the beige and the darkness of, like, I'm trying to think of like in the Jehovah temple.
I think it reflects, I think, their sort of temperament as well, and then like sort of the nature of the religion, you know, modesty and I think it's funny because the reading of the north, like, I'm not from here, so I don't have those preconceptions of England and like class struggle. I mean, I know about it, but like it's not my first go-to when I watch it. So it was more for me, like, it was more about the religion and these people's lives and the way they lead their lives. And, you know, exactly, I had a note about that as well. It's like there's sort of for me or anybody sort of living, you know, secular lifestyle in this day and age, like, you know, we have aspirations and we have goals and, you know, we're like go-getters and we want to do things, and like just to hear like, oh yeah, I'll be a window cleaner and you've got your gardening and like you live for the church basically, like that was a realization moment where I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, they live a very different life, you know. And like also I think it's not frowned upon, but it's not encouraged for people to go to like university, and education's not exactly.
Yeah, the mum, because Louise is at college and her art, her art class has changed when they have their meetings, and the mum says, well, then you can't go, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. She says like, oh, when Jesus comes to destroy the world, she's going to care about your art class.
Yeah.
She says it like while she's like making dinner, like she's pouring gravy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then just in that Mancunian accent as well. It's like, that scene does stand out now.
There's a like conception of when you set a film in this area, or when a film, when set in this part of England, you'd expect it to be a very kind of socio-political statement on poverty or something like that. So it's good that, I think it's nice that the film
doesn't go there.
It just sort of happens to be in this town, as you're saying. Like, it doesn't politicize it.
Yeah, there's no like scene where they dig out like the piggy bank and the scrimping and scraping.
Yeah.
You know, or the there's no heating in the house and there's just a shot of them all shivering on the sofa. Like, even though they are on the fringes due to it seems that the religion is kind of
taking care of them,
taking care of them, and like not.
Yeah, they don't worry.
Yeah, they don't. Know? But it's just, yeah, like the there's a Jehovah's Witness church near where I'm from in Bolton, I think, and that is like, very similar in terms of just like very understated. But you can tell the community does get by, but it's not exactly, you know, Range Rovers and stuff like that, which is all the more peculiar because when you think of like the church and the Roman Catholic Church is all exuberant and
that's
decadent.
Very anti what they're about, no?
Yeah, Jehovah's yeah, I know, but it's just interesting the two sides of the like coin, church, exactly. How church can be this
or Scientology,
yeah, and Luther, yeah.
So there is like a, without spoiling the film, there is a major turning point in the film, which, although it works well for the film, I found it a little bit too clearly sort of signposted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because the film, the way they execute that part of the film is done really well.
Yeah.
And especially how Finneran plays that, her reaction to this thing that's happened.
Yeah.
I'm trying to strap around it carefully, but... that's done amazingly. I just think from the off, I kind of knew that plot point was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's said at the very start,
yeah,
isn't
it's
it?
Kind of, so, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like it's
set up,
dropped in. But I think, you know, as I said, like the fact that they executed really well doesn't.
Yeah, and again, that's the sort of turning point that, you know, we were sort of talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, oh, all right. I'm just going to kind of go with it because it kind of does throw you. And then you're like, all right, I'm just going to go on this journey. I'm just going to see where it takes me.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying, but I think that like you kind of jump over it quite quickly.
Yeah, or maybe that's the point that they should have all seen it coming
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then it's written well enough that you don't feel like you've been done over in terms of like, oh, I didn't see that. Obviously, you do see it coming, but it's better to have kind of maybe had the hint about it rather than it coming out of left field.
Yeah.
And then you just you've taken this wrong turn. Like, it's similar to, it's weird, a comparison, but Hereditary, where it takes that turn. You know, like, even though that is like a cloak and dagger act, both films kind of you go with it because then the narrative strands off in a different direction. Mm. And you can just, and it's well written enough that Yvonne and Louisa are substantial enough and the performances are as well to constitute that absence. It's one of them watches where it is, I don't want to say grueling, but it's, you know, it's tough watching it like, upon reflection, you know, when you know what happens, because it, like, the aspect ratio, it's not Academy, he told me off in the interview for it.
Can't
remember what, I thought it was Academy, but it's not.
Neither is Paul Schrader's. First of all, it's not Academy.
Yeah. That looks Academy. No. Yeah. That's kind of both of these, religious focused films have gone for a strange.
Yeah, but it's like a certain, I can't remember what it is, but that perspective lends well to, like, absorbing you in this world.
Yeah.
So it is one that is got the hype around it, you know, like Peter Bradshaw, I think, gave it 5 stars and is it 4? Okay. And then like The Independent have given it 4 and I know, it's definitely got a level of hype for like a new British independent filmmaker, but I think everyone should just go with it and come out of it and see where they are, rather than going, you know, like similar to Hereditary, everyone was like, it's a new Exorcist. Like,
Don't over-egg it.
And try go see it in the cinema, I think, if you can, because I think it's one of those films that you want to be absorbed in.
Mm. Yeah, and I we can't talk about but the end. I think the ending is, bring it back to First Reformed again, is the ending suddenly makes you think about the rest of the film in a different way. Not this like a twist ending or anything, but how the last moments with Ivana, I think, really make you think about everything that's led up to this ending. And it's quite an unconventional ending.
Yeah,
I think
he does a really good job of showing how she's pushed to that sort of point.
And and her performance, you can just see it at the end. She's almost like crumbling a little bit, but just is like picking up the pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so that is Apostasy, which is out in cinemas and on Curzon Home Cinema today. Also on Curzon Home Cinema, we have the Whit Stillman collection, We spoke a bit about that last week. We recently had a double bill at Curzon Soho of The Last Days of Disco, which, Alistair, you were there.
Yeah, it was very, very good. It's too good. Too much fun for a Friday evening. Yeah.
And so we have, playing for you on this very podcast, we've got an audio Q&A with Whit Stillman that was recorded at the event, and also with breakout star Tom Bennett from Love and Friendship, another Whit Stillman film. So if you didn't make it to the Q&A, as Alistair had the pleasure to, we've recorded it and we'll upload it to this very podcast. And as promised, I'm going to read out an email now. This is Hannah Ryan, who saw Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again last week. In times such as these, we need films like Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, where happiness, love, and fun is italicized, in its purest form, are celebrated with total sincerity. Art, she says, should indeed reflect the state of the world as it is, but it should also serve as a means of escape, particularly from the dread we've been facing recently. And what better way to do so than join the likes of Streep and Cher and indulge in the joys of ABBA?
Yeah, I think that should be, you know, the Jehovah's have their Bible. I think this should be our Bible. I mean, yeah, most definitely.
Well, you can, Hannah has written a full review for the website Much Ado About Cinema, and you can find the link for that in our show notes as when we upload the show. If you've got any thoughts on Apostasy or Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, or any other of the recent releases, do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com for next week's show. As ever, please subscribe, leave a review and a comment if you enjoyed the show. You can follow Alistair Bayman at Alistair Bayman on Twitter. You can follow me at Sam_Howlett_1. And Kelly doesn't use Twitter.
I do have Twitter, I just don't use it.
Well, so is there any point of reading your handle? Do you remember your handle?
Yeah, I do.
What is it anyway?
KS_Powell.
There we go. And it's farewell to Brother Bayman.
Farewell. Father Howlett, do we want to
Elder
say?
Elder Howlett.
Sorry, wrong religion.
Farewell to Sister Powell.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.